The context of this is, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his youth before marriage, speaking to young girls who have come to worship Lord Shiva, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering them a blessing that their husbands will be as follows in the translation. They will be learned, clever and young, and possess abundant wealth and rice. Not only that, but you will each have seven sons who will all live long lives and be very intelligent. Purport. Generally, it is the ambition of a young girl to have a very handsome husband who is learned, clever, young and rich. According to the Vedic culture, one is rich if he possesses a large stock of food grain and a very large number of animals. Dhanyena dhanavan gavaya dhanavan. One is rich if he possesses food grain, cows and bulls. A girl also desires to have many children, especially sons, putra, who are very intelligent and long-lived. Now, because society has deteriorated, there is propaganda to have one or two children and kill the rest by contraceptive methods. But the natural ambition of a girl is to possess not only more than one child, but at least half a dozen. In exchange for the paraphernalia of worship he usurped for himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to bless the girls to fulfill all their ambitions and desires. One can very easily become happy and obtain the material benefits of a good husband, wealth, food grain, and a number of nice children by worshipping Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas at an early age, it is not necessary for his devotees to follow him by also taking sannyas. One can stay a householder, but one must be a devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then one will be happy with all the material opulences of a good home, good children, good mate, good wealth, and everything he desires. Therefore, the Shastras advise, Yagyai Sankirtana Prayaya Yajanti Hi Sumeda Saha. Every householder, therefore, who is actually intelligent should introduce the Sankirtan movement home to home and live peacefully in this life and go back to Godhead in the next. I may be wondering why I chose to speak on this verse. The reason is that because in the purport is discussed a subject about which I was asked some months ago, actually, by a member of this community. Should householder desire to have many children, or is it better just to have one or maybe two, and then one would be more free to preach Krishna consciousness? Yesterday I was trying to find a letter in the Vedabase in which Srila Prabhupada had intimated something like that, that householders can have one child and then send to Gurukul and then preach, but I didn't find that particular instruction, but I do believe it's there. So there are different outlooks here. This is a very different topic to the one, or at the end of the scale from the one that I discussed yesterday. This is in the bodily concept of life. A girl desires to have many children, especially sons. This is on the bodily platform, basically. Well, yesterday I was talking about the aspiration to be a gopi, which is completely off the bodily, gopi in the spiritual world. You can also be a gopi in the material world. Gopi doesn't necessarily mean a spiritually elevated person. It just simply means female of the cowherding community, which can be as mundane as anyone else, depending on their conscience. Of course, looking after cows is always pious, but not necessarily spiritual. And in one of the songs which I read yesterday, Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically states, Bhulibhoba Kobe Nidja Sthula Parichay, that when will I forget, become incognizant of my present identification with body, home, children, wife, relatives, and so on, so that he could be born, Vrishabhanu Pure Janama Loibo, I will be born in the village of Vrishabhanu, the father of Radharani. It's a very high aspiration that we're all supposed to be aspiring for. This is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita I'm reading from, which is the in the description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and his teachings, is the quintessence of all teachings. And here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is discussing matters which pertain to this material world and material consciousness. So why am I discussing this? It's apparently mundane topics. Well, Srila Prabhupada does. Srila Prabhupada, who directed us to the spiritual world, was also very much aware of our bondage in this material world, as Krishna is aware. Krishna therefore gives Chato Varnyang Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha, the four orders of life, spiritual, and the four vocational orders of life, and the four stages of life, and these are meant ultimately for engaging a person in Krishna's service. So although the Varnashram system is a system for organizing mundane society, because it's given by God, and especially if it is specifically focused on the worship of Vishnu, then it is a stepping stone to transcendence. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yuktam Vairagyam Uchate. If we live in this world, anasaktasya vishayan, without being attached to the objects of sense gratification, anasaktasya vishayam yataham upayunjataha, but using them as needed, moderately, in the service of Krishna, that is called proper renunciation. That doesn't mean that we do whatever we want for sense gratification and say, well, just chant Hare Krishna and then it's all right. That's a misinterpretation. But those activities which are specifically recommended in Shastra, even for materialistic people, certain of them can be engaged in the service of Krishna. Therefore, we have the smritis. Smritis are a whole class, otherwise known as dharma shastras. They're a whole class of directions derived from Vedic literature on how to live in this world, which are made for different peoples in different times, places, consciousness, and circumstances, and for followers of Shiva, for followers of Madhvacharya, for followers of Ramanujacharya, and for the Gauriya Vaishnavas, there is Hari Bhakti Vilas, and there are 20 principal smritis. Actually, there are hundreds of them, but 20 principal ones, of which Srila Prabhupada always gave most emphasis to Manu, and in this Kali Yuga, the Parashara Smriti is supposed to be most important, and there are many others: Yajnavalkya Smriti, Narada Smriti, Vishnu Smriti, Haritha Smriti, Vishnu Smriti, and so on. So they give rules and regulations how to live in this world according to the principles of Shastra, according to the principles of Dharma, while fulfilling material desires in a scripturally ordained manner, and at the same time performing pious activities, welfare work for others, performing one's duty as a cooperative member of society, and in the case of the Vaishnavas, simultaneously making spiritual advancement. So many of the rules of the materialists are very similar to those for spiritualists, such as everyone should rise early, everyone should follow principles of scripture, although which particular principles, some, there may be some difference for all of them. One should respect the cows, one should respect the brahmanas and the gurus, one should eat with the right hand, and there are so many rules which are given, which are shared by all members of the Vedic community. And those who may deliberately flout them, they may be tantrics or chandalas or persons who are outside the Vedic culture. So at this particular point about householders, the householder life, the young girls who had come to worship Lord Shiva for the sake of getting a good husband, they were on the surface not particularly Vaishnavas, although being born in Navadvipa and especially at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can understand their extremely elevated personalities. But as in Leela, Krishna Leela, Gaura Leela, many participants in that may externally appear to be like mundane people. Mundane people have attachment to home, wife, children, and so on. But in the case of Krishna Leela, to be attached to one's wife in the case of Nanda Maharaj is not anything mundane, and to be attached to child in the case of Krishna is certainly not mundane, and to be attached to one's home and land when the home and land is Vrindavan, that is certainly not mundane. So the girls appeared to be ordinary girls who wanted a good husband, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered to bless them with having husbands who would be learned, expert and humorous, young, rich, and that the girls, having been married, would have at least 7 sons each. Srila Prabhupada writes, generally it is the ambition of a young girl to have a very handsome husband who is learned, clever, young, and rich. Many young girls and others nowadays, in the Western world especially, would contest that. And Srila Prabhupada writes, a girl also desires to have many children, especially sons. And many would protest that, and especially the part about, well, definitely having many children, and especially sons. Why especially sons? So this may be considered to be some archaic, sexist statement, but actually it was accepted all over the world until a short time ago that women would get married and have children, not vice versa, or having children and then not getting married at all. That was not an option, and there were many cases recently in Ireland. It came to light that many girls in the past who had children prior to marriage gave them to some orphanage, and a huge graveyard of babies was found at the orphanage. How many were found? I don't remember. Is there anyone? 850. It seems like it was an ongoing tradition. That didn't all happen all at once. Another alternative for the girl was to commit suicide if she was pregnant, or if she could get it done, to have an abortion done, which could be very dangerous for the life of the girl also. So nowadays we're more enlightened, and we just accept that, well, boys will be boys and girls will be girls and pregnancies will be pregnancies and what the hell does it matter anyway, whether you're married or not, having children. And then even if you get married then and have children, then in India, the saying, I believe this came out during the period of Indira Gandhi's government, Hamdo Hamare Do, we are two, ours are two, which means we are two means husband and wife, and we have two children. And sometimes that becomes Hamare Ek, we have one only. So that was propaganda to have only two or one children. Now, here Srila Prabhupada writes, now because society has deteriorated, there's propaganda to have one or two children and kill the rest by contraceptive methods. according to Shastra, as we learn from Srila Prabhupada's teachings, to use preventive contraception is as sinful as abortion. It's highly sinful. The ambition of a girl to have many children, Srila Prabhupada writes that this is natural. That would be considered normal previously. Nowadays, girls want to be fighter pilots and naval officers and office clerks and like this. And the idea is that women have been mistreated and exploited over innumerable generations. Now it's time for the girls to stand up and show that they're as good as anything else, and having children is just some nuisance on the way, which some go along with and many don't. In Krishna consciousness, we could consider that one way to make new devotees is to have children. That's very much part of Islam, to increase the number of Muslims by having many children. The Muslims, mostly in India, they never went along with the Hamdo Hamare Do propaganda. And therefore we find that the population of Muslims in relation to those of Hindus is increasing throughout India. The idea that one has only one or two children and then preaches, well, that's also a good idea, although most householders we don't see are very much dedicated to preaching. And those who are dedicated to preaching, they may have many children and still they'll preach, as did, for instance, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And I know of one devotee who has now, it's difficult to keep count, I think he has 8 children now. And he's in America. And he's also, he has a full-time job and he's also active in preaching Krishna consciousness. So having children is not necessarily an obstacle to preaching if one desires to do so, although one should not neglect the children in the name of a higher duty of preaching. That the ambition of a young girl is to have husband and children, that is not much appreciated in the modern age, where the idea is that women should be ambitious to have jobs, to have a good career, conquer the world and all this kind of thing, although most of them don't, and most of them end up in some factory job or something like this, if they get a job at all, and then they feel frustrated that they didn't become the world conquering she, but she became just another factory worker or clerk or there's all this propaganda that women should have equal opportunities and there should be the same number of women as men in each of the professions, and why in the higher strata of science. There are not enough women. So in America, there's some policy to have same number of women as men in the high areas of science and research. But we see there are some areas which are dominated by women. For instance, at the check-in counters at airports, and the stewardess is usually stewardesses, air hostesses, not air hosts. Midwives are mostly women, and so on. So no one's making propaganda. That why don't men have enough of these jobs? Anyway, I don't want to get too much into discussion of the curse of feminism here. That it is natural for a woman to want to have many children, it doesn't seem like that at the present time, because the way people are raised in the world today, it seems that, well, it's not natural. It's natural for them to want to have a job and this and that. But in the normal course of a relatively sane society, it is recognized that women have a very important role to play in having children and in raising them, and they're given all facility to do so. Whether devotees should have one or two children or have many children, well, ultimately that's going to have to be up to them individually. I would encourage, if they want to have more children, have them and raise them as devotees, which seems to be a difficult job in the present age, but it can be done by all. If the parents, as I was reading yesterday in some letters from Srila Prabhupada, if the parents themselves set an example of dedication to Krishna, then the children will tend to follow that. And even by the influence of modern society, they may stray off a bit here and there. They're definitely going to have a strong impression of Krishna throughout their life, and that will never go away, even life after life. And even if they don't take very strongly to Krishna consciousness, as actually quite a few of them do, in India especially, we find now that many children of devotees who are themselves grown up are just going along in the same way as their parents and getting initiated and going on with devotional life. And in other countries, I'm seeing also, it may be less the further further we get into the modern way of life. Some years ago, I was in Tatarstan in Russia, which is just at the far eastern part of Europe before the landmass is recognized as being Asia, just on the western side of the Ural Mountains, which demarcates Europe and Asia. So people there, at that time especially, and even now, are quite removed from the frenzy of highly consumeristic, competitive, sense gratificatory, degraded society. And then I next came to St. Petersburg, which is west of there, and it's a major city. And it was coming from Kazan in Tatarstan, which since that time has developed, to use that word, quite a lot. But St. Petersburg was considerably more urbane and materialistic. And then I next came to Lithuania, where the influence of the Western world was visible, although not pronounced. Then I came to Warsaw, moving west all the time towards Western Europe, to Warsaw, which was the Western influence was quite pronounced, and the people were more materialistic and money interested and living life fast and stressed and away from any traditional kinds of values. And then I came to Berlin, which is the pits one of the world's most degraded cities. And it was quite clear as I was moving west how the degradation was increasing as we went to the west. Paschima Loksha Mura Anachan in Chaitanya Charitamrita had stated that people in the west are all fools and rascals. That's a good translation, Mura Anacha. So although in the west people are very proud of their civilization, which they have developed, this modern way of life is definitely a Western phenomenon. There is modern way of life powered by science and technology, science and technology being a distinctly Western enterprise, which from the beginning has been in tension with Christianity. So people are very proud that we have now discovered that there's no God and man is the measure of all things. Actually, that was said about 2,000 years ago by a Greek philosopher. Man is the measure of all things and we can discover everything all by ourselves. And all these traditional values, primitive values, such as that women should be mothers, although they didn't quite make an alternative for that yet, but they're working on it. Women should be mothers and wives and look after their children. They've transcended all these ideas. Although in the Western world, we see that people are not happy. The character is increasingly very poor. People take intoxication, either prescribed or non-prescribed. And people's aim of life is, mostly people don't even think about what their aim of life is. And most people are just frittering their lives away being interested in sports, fashions, and entertainment and silly things like that. And we find all over the world that to the extent that the influence of Western civilization is there, then the more people are degraded according to traditional values, although according to liberal Western humanists, their values are the best. So Srila Prabhupada was very traditional in presenting Vedic culture. He was aware that people, to be Krishna conscious, it's not going to work on a template of the Western degraded demoniac society. So he gave many guidelines for introducing Vedic culture. At the same time, he introduced the completely transcendent Krishna consciousness, which within this world can be practiced on the basis of Vedic culture. But even with regular Vedic culture, there is some kind of tension there because the whole idea of having, here it's stated about having children and having a rich husband and all these things, that is for living relatively peacefully within this world and fulfilling one's material desires in a pious way. But ultimately, material desires are to be fully eschewed because they bind us to this material world. So there's Vedic cultures, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And moksha, this desire for moksha, for release from this world, it doesn't go, it's a different channel to that of artha, economic development, and karma, sense gratification. And Krishna consciousness, it doesn't fit with mundane dharma or artha or karma or moksha. Although there is dharma is to be followed, but in the completely perfect state, one intrinsically doesn't care for worldly dharma. So there is some kind of tension there. At the same time, one who's not fully self-realized, that is recommended by Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find in his instructions to Uddhava, and very much so in Bhagavad Gita, that one should follow dharma on the mundane platform, or according to the rule, according to the rules of this world, and practice Krishna consciousness simultaneously. Because if one gives up the rules and regulations of spiritual life and even of material life before one has come to the platform where one can just be Krishna conscious without the protection and guidance of the rules and regulations, then he will simply fall down. So here recommended to have many children. This is in Srila Prabhupada's books, especially this Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially meant for devotees, already committed devotees. May they have many children. Well, and again, it's up to you. It's up to the individual householder. The attitude that children are a burden is prominent in the modern world. Of course, in traditional societies, there were many helpers. There was not just one father and one mother, but there'd be many fathers and mothers all to help. So it can be difficult, but in old age, the reward will be to see the children in Krishna consciousness, hopefully, at least some. And that they, if they are themselves, if they've picked up the principles of dharma, then they will care for their parents in their old age, which in the modern age, children don't do. It's just normal that old parents go to some old folks' home, which is some pre-hell hell. Those who are going to hell get prepared for it in the old folks' home. So a horrible situation of very unhappy people. Anyway, people are unhappy in this world. They're trying to fulfill their material desires, but they don't, and therefore they feel frustrated and in so many ways. And then they go to an old folks' home, as is whatever they call it nowadays, and they still have the same material desires, but they know that they have no way to fulfill those desires anymore, and that they're just waiting to die, that's all. So it's a miserable situation for them. No dignity. They're just people who they know that anyone who knew them were just wishing they'd die as soon as possible, because it's just a burden for them to be around. Materially, we get different bodies according to our desires and what we need to go through. So, generally, therefore, it's recommended that everyone get married. Not everyone can immediately come to the completely transcendental platform. Especially Srila Prabhupada, in describing about Gandhari, being upset when Kunti gave birth to a child before she, Gandhari, did. Srila Prabhupada describes that even for such an elevated woman as Gandhari, it's very difficult to overcome that womanly nature. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto purport that everyone should get married, especially women. Even there's a strong desire to be Krishna conscious. There are certain desires that go with the body that have to be worked through, otherwise that means for having a husband and having children, and although one may deny those, it may be very difficult to overcome, and our Krishna consciousness may be blocked by what one of my god brothers calls the pure devotee syndrome, that one thinks that one's already on the pure devotional platform and I don't need to do all this, but according to Shastra and according to the teachings of our founder Acharya, that is necessary, except in some very rare cases, and most of those who think they are one of the rare cases are not, as we see. So these are all considerations on the mundane platform, but as they relate to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's not really mundane. It's yuktam vairagya mucchate. It's said to be a proper understanding of renunciation. For someone who's trying to be Krishna consciousness, one aspect of proper renunciation may be to renounce his own ideas of what he thinks is best for himself and take instruction from others, as Priyavrata did. He was a brahmachari and he was quite happy being a brahmachari, and then Lord Brahma came and said, hey, the fun's over. The tapasya is over. Now it's time to become a householder. And he didn't want to, but Lord Brahma insisted, Manu insisted, and then he had no... Even Narada in this case, who was famous for saving brahmacharis from entering grihastha life, in this case he submitted on the order of higher authorities. And Priyavrata wasn't the loser by that. Yeah, he discharged the service which he was asked to do by Lord Brahma and Manu. He discharged that service as a householder, the suitable position for doing that. And ultimately he developed pure Krishna consciousness and went back home, back to Godhead. Whereas if he had denied the order of his superiors, that would have been an obstacle in his ongoing advancement in Krishna consciousness. So there are various considerations we find in the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Mahabharata, Ramayana. There are so many descriptions of dharma in action. There are the rules of life which are given in the dharma shastras, how we should live our life. But practically, how do we follow that in this complex world with our complex minds and our complex ambitions? And how do we practically act? The shastras cannot legislate for every situation because there are unlimited types of situations that arise at every moment. So most of them are covered by shastra, but... How do you cover, for instance, the situation where where Rama, he was told to go to the forest, and then everyone said, don't. In this case, you shouldn't follow your father's order. He said, no, I'm going to follow it. So, What should one do in such a situation? Should one follow it or not follow it? There were good grounds for either case. Ultimately, Ram went to the forest. Arjuna, another case. Clearly, he was expected to fight, but then he gave what seemed to be excellent reasons for not fighting. And then the whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken to convince Arjuna that in this situation, contrary to Arjuna's personal understanding of what was right, that Arjuna would be right by fighting, not by refraining from fighting. So exactly how one applies all these injunctions of dharma in one's own life may vary according to person and situation. But we see that here Srila Prabhupada, very much against the general recommendation of modern society, is recommending that women have many children, although in another case it seems for his household is recommending don't have many children so that you can get back into the preaching as soon as possible. Of course, those were in the early days of the movement, and later Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish varnashram communities. So there may be various extenuating and complex threads of discussion about this. Just that question came to me. And how to apply in your own life, whether to have many children or just a few children, it'll have to be up to the individual also. But one householder couple, my disciples, they asked me that some years ago, that should they have another child, the wife wants to have one, the husband doesn't. So based on what I understood from Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Prabhupada said it's the husband's duty to give the wife children. So I said, well, that's what Prabhupada says. So I have to say also. So they had another child. So, and if they'd asked again, which they didn't, then I would have said the same thing also. Because this is what I understand from Srila Prabhupada's books, and there may be other interpretations, or understandings, or aspirations, or whatsoever, but these are some of my thoughts on this subject. So, while we may ultimately aspire to be gopis in the spiritual world, in the meantime, we have to sort out what's going on down in this world with our desires, ambitions, hopes, aspirations, and attachments. We have to get free from all mundane attachments, which may mean that we have to live them out to some extent. It's because the nature of material attachment is often so strong that we just can't. We may think, oh, now I'm giving it, now I'm just leaving it all behind. But in most cases, that doesn't work because material attachments are very strong and people's minds and their determination tends to be very weak. So there's the Vedic process of working within a framework of shastric directions, being cognizant of one's material attachments, and fulfilling desires to some extent, while at the same time strongly cultivating Krishna consciousness, with the idea that one will gradually, by the practice of Krishna consciousness, become detached from family entanglement. One will have the strength of mind to emerge from all of this as a vanaprastha, one who is withdrawing from the world, although not fully withdrawn from it. And then some men may accept sannyas, and in whatever situation one may be, one can, by following this Vedic process which regulates our material life and our spiritual life, become gradually sufficiently advanced so that one can go back home, back to Godhead. As Srila Prabhupada writes here, every householder who is actually intelligent should introduce the Sankirtan movement home to home and live peacefully in this life and go back to Godhead in the next. So clearly from this statement, a householder can make advancement on the path back to Godhead by preaching Krishna consciousness, introducing the Sankirtan movement home to home, and can go back to Godhead. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, or objections may be fielded now. Yeah. Should members of ISKCON, young girls, go to Lord Shiva to pray for good husbands? Well, should pray to someone. The number of good husbands doesn't seem to fit the supply isn't as strong as the demand. Well, that's always recommended that one goes to Krishna. Within the Vedic culture, one may approach Lord Shiva. But in pure Krishna consciousness, one approaches Krishna for everything. So we don't recommend that girls growing up as the girls growing up as devotees under Srila Prabhupada's guidance adopt demigod worship for getting good husbands. Can I ask Krishna? Anything else, ladies? Anything to say? Yeah. How can one see that one is above the modes of material nature? Well, that's what Arjuna asked, right? That's in the, where is that, at the end of the 13th chapter of Gita. He asked, what are the symptoms of one who has transcended the modes of material nature? And there are a few verses, Krishna. Amanitvam, madambitvam. Well, where is the book? Let's have a look and see. How can one see if one has transcended the modes of nature? Where is that? Oh, let's find the verse index. Hope there is one here. The 14th chapter is the modes of nature, isn't it? Should know this by now after so many years of studying Gita, which were... No, it's in the 13th chapter. Not the end. Oh, that's the description of knowledge, yeah. Amanitvam, adambitvam. And that's in the 13th chapter. And then, in the end of the 14th chapter, all right. Arjuna asks, Arjuna vacha kailingai stri gunane tana tito bhavati prabho king acharak katam chaitang strin gunanati vartate. Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior and how does he transcend the modes of nature? Sri Bhagavan uvacha. Prakashang cha pravritting cha mohameva cha pandavana dveshti sampravrittani nanavrittani kankshati. Udasinavada sino gunaya yo navichalyate gunavartante ityevang yovatishtati ningate. Samadukha sukhasvasta samaloshta ashmakanchanaha. Tulya priya priyo dhiras tulya nindatma sangstutihi. Manapamana yos tulyas. Tulyo mitrari pakshayoho sava ramba prityagi gunatita sa uchate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. So that's your answer. Yes.
Maybe when you mentioned that householder desire children so that in the future that somebody might take care of them.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the package. Yeah, parents desire that their children look after them in old age, but if their son, in one purport here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is leaving home to take sannyas, Srila Prabhupada writes, I believe he's following the commentary of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that every mother should encourage her son to go out of the home to find Krishna. And she who doesn't, she becomes Maya. This is a play on the Bengali, because plural of mother is Mayara. She becomes Maya. So both considerations are there. Yeah, that's very common in India. The children's first duty is to the parents. And it didn't used to be such a problem when they had many kids, but when they only have one child or one son, and there's no one to look after them in their old age, then parents become very concerned if their children become devotees. And there are many cases, not only in India, but also in Russia and Eastern Europe, where devotees who are living as brahmacharis, they go back to home to when their parents become old to look after them. Because do we preach to them to do so or not to do so? Again, we'll have to see each individual case. It's a good thing to do, to look after one's elderly parents. One of my godbrothers, he spent 3 years looking after his mother. He had other brothers and sisters, but they weren't doing it. He went and looked at, that was his full-time service for 3 years, looking after his elderly mother. He was, his service of translating from Sanskrit for the BBT stopped for 3 years. He said, he told me that I felt I should do that, because after all, the mother gives the body, and if we don't start to do it, then no one's going to do it, and these are the kind of things we want to introduce in our society. But we'll have to see each individual case. If someone's actually performing a very powerful and important service in the Sankirtan movement, that may be an overriding consideration. As Ramanuja, he left his young wife to take sannyas. This Raghavendra Swami, he left his wife, a young wife, and she committed suicide in desperation, Raghavendra's wife. Yeah. But then what they did, they were very powerful acharyas. If you just leave home, just like in India, there, especially in North India, there's so many sadhus wandering here and there. I believe most, they won't talk about it if you attempt to talk about it. But I believe that most of them are frustrated in their home life and just left. Well, they have a pious inclination, but that would, I would guess in most cases, that's the overriding motive. So that may not be so very laudable, just to leave because you're frustrated. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.